16 million colors. Wreak some havoc in your head. Welcome to Titancast, your home for Sega Saturn news, commentary, personal stories, and more. My name's Samuel, the Southern Sega Gentleman. With me today, once again, hailing all the way from the great city of Manchester, our Lord and Savior, the originator, Father K, or Simon, if you will. As well, we also have our West Coast correspondent, the virtuous schlub, or Brian.
Yo.
All right, boys and girls. So, we were going to have a nice little treat in store for you today. We've got some news to come out, and I figured since Father K has not been with us for a good little bit of time now, we'd go ahead and let him talk about some site news and Facebook news for us.
Okay, well, first of all, there's been a bit of a drought on the main site, which I'm intending to fix this month. We're going to have some more articles coming up this month. But over on the Facebook page, we've got a new challenge coming up since the Winter Heat Challenge. That we ran a couple of weeks during the Winter Olympics. We've now got the Daytona Challenge coming up. So a firm favourite amongst the Facebook community. Just going to give everyone the opportunity to do their circuits, their eight laps of the first circuit in Daytona on whatever edition they have, be it the circuit edition or the championship edition. And just let people publish their scores up there, hopefully. We've had a good response from that already, so that's something good. We've got a new admin on the site who's called Morgan Patrick, and Morgan very kindly sent me her CD that she made a few years back, which is themed around Nights into Dreams, which is absolutely amazing. It's a hip hop CD, and it's something that I've been listening to on a bit of a loop. So. Some fantastic Saturn-related music in my life recently, which is really good. And a lot of new games. I've been discussing this with Brian while we were just getting the podcast set up. I've got a lot of new games, which I'll be able to talk about later on. Things have been great for me in terms of the Saturn world. I've got a lot of exciting stuff. I don't know if I'd told you last time that I've got my Saturn up and running for playing movies. I've got a video card for my PAL Saturn now, so I've been watching Star Wars and Futurama, and what else have I watched? About a Boy. I've got a few The Minority Report. I've got a few VCDs, terrible quality but still a kick to be watching them on the Saturn. So that's my news, and I guess that's me out.
Roger that, roger that. All right, Brian, you got any news for us from the worlds of YouTubes?
Yeah, I guess so. I had put up a video last week on Friday about, it's another grudge match. It's a grudge match video that pits Die Hard Arcade on the Saturn, or that Saturn port of it, and then its sequel, Dynamite Cop on Dreamcast. It was kind of fun to do kind of a cross episode where we would have to cover both, you know, Saturn and Dreamcast content in the same place, and really it kind of made me appreciate how well Die Hard Arcade is held up, because, you know, that gameplay formula of just that beat-em-up genre, for those who aren't familiar, it's kind of a beat-em-up game similar to like the Streets of Rage and Golden Axe series, and it's a 3D, as far as I know, it was one of the first 3D iterations of that genre as things were moving in the polygonal direction, and I think it still plays outstandingly today, and I really kind of lament the fact that developers didn't make, you know, that genre kind of died out starting around that time too, and we didn't get, you know, of course he had a lot of you know, Fighting Force, and you know, there, those types of games did exist, but I really wish they, you know, that it kind of hung on, but it just kind of fell out of favor, and it wasn't very popular by that point. But anyway, yeah, the YouTube, or the video's up on YouTube now, so if you haven't seen it already, go ahead and do so.
Top of that, we've also got My Mobile Suit Gundam Side Story, The Blue Destiny. That one has dropped out already. That was about a week and a half ago. And as well, we've got our third installment of the Panzer Dragoon Saga Live Play, Let's Play, whatever you want to call it. You know, a lot of people do Let's Plays where they basically just run you through the game, and it's like a strategy guide talking to you. And while those are very interesting, if you haven't noticed already from our Let's Plays, it's basically a bunch of guys sitting on the couch talking a whole bunch of crap to each other, and it's kind of enjoyable in that regards. We go on some tangents every now and then. And on top of that, we also had the, what was it, Gun Griffin 2 Let's Play, and we've got a couple more videos coming out soon. Well, I mean, we've always got more videos coming out soon, but stay tuned. And on top of that, we have some shout-outs we need to talk about. Of course, we always like to give our plug out to the big sister, big brother. Of course, our Mr. Tom Shattuck. He founded the Dreamcast Junkyard and created that little thing called the Dream Pod. And thanks to him, Mr. Simon gave birth to this nice little junkyard. So we always want to give a shout-out to him as well. We got our Sega Saturn Shiro podcast brothers and sisters now. And on top of that, from the YouTube worlds, we got a Mr. Andrew Rasa, who decided to, probably butchered his name, possibly not, I don't know. It'd be all right, he's cool people. But on top of that, he's the guy who's in charge, or the founder, creator, whatever the case it might be, for Mastercast TV. If you haven't given him a like, haven't looked at him any, watched any of his videos, go over there, give him a shout out, man. He's good people, he's got some awesome Let's Plays, Resident Evil and such. He does more than just Sega Saturn, he does Sega in general. So I really enjoy his channel. I think some of the other creators here kind of like his channel. Hope so, at least. But
Andrew also entered the competition for the 11-year graphic for the Saturn Junkyard as well. I don't know if you knew that, Sam.
Yeah, he did. That's what he was talking about in his podcast. He entered our little competition. He didn't come in first place. Hell, I didn't come in first place. I came in third place. I guess I don't know. But at the end of the day, he's good people. Go give him some love, man. Now, we had been wanting to do, if you've already listened to the Shiro podcast, then you probably know that both of us were planning on doing a discussion on backups, a discussion on repros, etc., etc. Now, what I want to make clear is the whole legal aspect of this. Now, according to U.S. law, this is U.S. law we're talking about. Depending on your country, region, whatever the case may be, things will be different. You need to check your local laws always in regards to any legalities, and understand full well we are not lawyers, even though some of us were basically on the track to go to law school. Regardless, we're not lawyers. So, legal disclaimers out in the open. To use a BIOS for any console, you have to own that console, all right? On top of that, if you want to create a backup of any media, you have to own the original retail copy. Now, if at any time you do not own the original retail copy any longer, legally, you cannot have a backup any longer. So, legal disclaimers out of the way. And now that we are approximately 7-8 minutes into this podcast, I've got news for y'all. This is the end of the Titancast portion of this podcast. We will be signing off as the Southern Sega Gentleman, as Father K, and as the Virtual Schlub. And from this point on, if you decide you want to keep listening and actually hear us talk about some repro and backup goodness, give it about 10 seconds and listen through this nice little audio mix, and we'll be back. All right, now that we're up in the actual podcast, not cast, whatever you want to call it, we're going to have a little bit of backroom discussion amongst the boys. And very first thing is, general thoughts on the use of backups. That's something in the community that is kind of 50-50 in all honesty. I've seen a lot of people who are absolutely against them. I've seen a lot of people who are absolutely in favor of them. I haven't seen a lot of people who are on the middle of the fence. You know, me, myself, personally, my thoughts on backups is that it's absolutely essential to back up CD-based media. I have numerous titles already that have suffered from disk rot. I have numerous titles that have issues with data holes in them. A lot of these games are getting extremely expensive to pick up, especially on the Sega Saturn. So the use of backups for me is absolutely essential. I mean, there's no reason that my collection should go down the drain just because of some kind of disaster, or even though, you know, the likelihood of, you know, where my games are flooding is low. I mean, something like that could possibly happen. I mean, I do live in Louisiana after all. So, that's kind of my general thoughts on it. Let's go ahead and, see what the rest of y'all think about it.
Okay. I'm going to chime right in here. I think the words that we're using, lead very much into what people feel about this whole issue. So if we're talking about backups, I think that not many people are going to have a problem with the idea of having a disc in reserve should something bad happen to your game that you rightfully own, that you bought, and so on. I think when we talk about copies, that's when some people begin to object, because the issue, obviously, the sort of elephant in the room is that a copy, if you don't own the actual game, is I guess piracy. It's you doing something vaguely illegal or maybe blatantly illegal. And you know what? I don't have a problem with that at all. And I'm going to explain that. I'm old enough to be from an age where vinyl LPs were the music media of the day. And of course, during that time, we also had cassettes. And the done thing at the time, if you had a friend that had a certain album by a certain band and didn't have it, you would give them a cassette and they would put it into their stereo and they would do you a tape of that album. Now, as soon as they gave you that tape, you had illegally, I guess, downloaded or copied music that you didn't own, that you didn't have a right to have. And every single person I know did that in the 70s and 80s and 90s. We did it when CDs came out. And then when CDs came out, of course, you could copy CDs, music CDs. So the sort of whole issue of are you doing something immoral or wrong? For me, I'd already got out of the way a long time ago with cassettes, because like everyone from my generation, we made mixtapes and we made tapes of albums from other people. And we also used to plug two VHS video recorders together and pirate movies by getting one from the video store and then putting it onto a tape that you'd bought in the shop by wiring up to video recorders. So, you know, for me, now a copied game is simply an extension of that. And as I had no problems making cassettes back in the day, I have no problem using and making copies. So that's my first thoughts on the whole scene.
Yeah, I, you know, to echo some of that, I see a few different pillars that kind of rests on, you know, why backups and even taking it further, as you did, Simon, you know, repros or copies or the kind of value or just why they're necessary, especially in the Saturn scene, where the Sega Saturn, it's 20-year-old console. And so there's more than that now. And so, you know, so many of these games had such limited print runs as it was, that the expectation that everybody is going, who wants to collect for it in this day and age, is going to be able to track down, you know, even a small fraction of those games legitimately, is, I think, an unrealistic expectation if our goal is to continue to expand the accessibility and of the community surrounding this awesome console of ours. So, you know, there is that accessibility aspect is, I think, a huge part of it. And so anything you can do to improve the possibility that somebody will be able to play those great games, those, you know, Panzer Dragoon Sagas and those Burning Rangers and Shining Force and all those games, I mean, you know, I think overall for the health of the community, having those options available is a big plus. And of course, as you also mentioned, Sam, the preservation, just not just like archival and historical value of having these games available digitally or copied or other, you know, backed up in other ways is probably the best or the, you know, most important thing we can do to combat the fact that CDs are a temporary, they were never meant to be a permanent storage medium. I mean, they just, and especially the way that, Sega went about it, I think for a lot of the US Saturn games, at least, they ended up using some of the leftover Sega CD games, I thought, or at least the discs to print those games on. And I think what ended up happening is that they were pretty shoddy label quality as it was, which is why disc rot is particularly prevalent, or one of the reasons why it appears to be prevalent this day and age, because those discs just weren't, they just are inherently flawed and not, they're defective and not built as well as like an Xbox or a PlayStation disc, which had better quality labeling to begin with. The other part of that, or the final pillar, I think, is just the tangibility is like a collectible for a lot of, for if you're looking more at repros and that reproduction scene where people are actually taking games and putting their own spin on creating a full art for it, and the instruction book and a new disc, and actually make it look like a professional product, especially if they put their own artistic spin on it. I think that, you know, that's another part of it that is worth talking about.
Right. And, you know, this probably ain't going to get me any fans or anything, but, you know, whenever I was a couple weeks back, I did a poll over on the Facebook group trying to figure out what people thought about the idea of repros or backups, or, you know, however you want to describe it. You know, some people say copies for just a blank CDR. Some people say backups for, you know, your own personal media. Some people say repros. I mean, there's all these different terms. I mean, at the end of the day, you're putting data on a disc. That's what it all boils down to. The showmanship of it, I think, is where the differencing of words, and that's what we're kind of alluding to is, you know, but based on a lot of responses and based on what I've seen in the community, I hate to always be one of them guys that this is a two-sided story, but in a lot of ways it is a two-sided story. I think you have gamers and you have collectors, and then you have people in the middle. I think there's a spectrum. There's the people who are just strictly gamers. They don't care about, you know, what it looks like on the shelf, if it even is on the shelf. They just want to play the game. Then you've got people who are collectors who will never even play the game. It's a showpiece on a shelf. It's like, look what I got. I mean, I'm guilty of it as much. I mean, I think everybody to a certain extent is a collector about something. I mean, I'm, you know, still trying to finish up my Sega Master System US collection, but I put myself more in the gamer tier because I just want to play the games. Now, I like having things that look nice on the shelf. I mean, I can't even display my Saturn collection as it is. I mean, I've got 200 something loose disc, and they're spread across three different places. Some of them are in cases, little DVD cases with, you know, printed out artwork, and some of them are in a CD binder, and some of them are in those little, you know, slim case jewel cases. I mean, they're all over the place. Hell, I don't even know what games I have half the time. I don't even have a list. So I really think that, you know, if you categorize it like that, what I'm trying to say basically is that there's this attitude from certain people in the community of holier than thou that, you know, if you don't pay $100-something, to play that game, then you shouldn't be playing that game. And yep. I think that's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, it's a games console. It's a games console. It's meant to be played. It's meant to put media in it and play it. And if we're going to sit here and try to put somebody down up on the ground because they can't afford to pay $50 for a good game, in the instance of the Sega Saturn, I mean, there's not very many games that are under $50 that are even worth playing. There's a lot of shovelware. I hate to be like that, but they're just ain't. So if you expect somebody to drop full retail for a modern game for, you know, something from 20 years ago that they might enjoy, and that's kind of where my biggest deal is I see, you know, the aspect of copies and backups for a lot of people just getting in this scene as a way for them to rent, you know, quotation marks around it, to rent these games. Because, I mean, there is no Blockbuster or Hollywood Video or whatever, you know, the case might have been in your country, region, whatever. We don't have that option anymore. You can't go rent these games. And, I mean, I'll be honest with you, there aren't very many people around me that even have a Saturn or games for it. So the option of just, like, you know, going and grabbing a game and seeing if you like it before you buy it, it isn't really there. I mean, you got, you know, Let's Plays and stuff and playthroughs on YouTube, but I mean, watching somebody else play the game and actually putting your hands on the control pad and doing it yourself are two things entirely different.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And also, I mean, just kind of going back to what you were saying, like, I mean, I think people have, like, I think as a community, we need to recognize that people have different focuses. They have different aspects and of just interest and things they're wanting to get out of this medium. And yeah, whether that's purely just playing the games, and you know, whether they're digital or however they want copies or however they want to do it, emulation, or somebody who is a hardcore collector. I mean, I think we need to take a step back and start respecting the fact that these people are all gathered around this tent for different reasons, and that's okay. I mean, but they're still part of the community, and it's still it's still better for it to have all these people who are interested in the Saturn, even if they're not interested in the exact same, you know, they're not appreciating it in the exact same way.
Yeah,
and that's totally cool, and I think people need to kind of take a step back and think about that a bit.
I have to say as well, for me, my very first experience of getting a game which was a backup was when John Lee sent me a set of Police Note discs. Now, he sent me three discs with just a marker pen title for each one. So in no trying to replicate the actual hard copy of the game. And in fact, the discs he sent me had a fan translation on, so there was no way, even if I'd wanted to buy a Police Notes set, a Japanese import copy, there's no way that I could have had the same experience as I got from John sending me the copies, because he sent me a fan translation copy, meaning that for every piece of dialogue and every written word that appears on the Police Notes disc, there was now an English translation. Now, without the copy scene, there's no way you could have that experience as someone who doesn't speak Japanese. The experience Police Notes prior to the fan translation and copies being made available on the internet was to have a Japanese version with perhaps a written translation that you had to keep referencing, you know, next to your physical written translation. So having backups and copies actually enables you to have an experience. That's what I think it is. Aside from the repro scene, when you just get a disc that's been given to you by a friend, you know, with no financial transaction, no profit, no one's trying to stop anyone else from having their the money that's due to them. All you are doing is it's a friend perhaps passing you an experience. That's what John did for me. He sent me three discs, and he gave me an experience that I never envisaged having, and, you know, having the ability to play copies, repros, backups on your Saturn just opens up an entire world, an unaffordable world for a lot of people. And should those people who perhaps aren't financially able, should they be prevented from having those experiences when we are now 20-something years down the line from when those experiences were created? I very much doubt there are many of the creators of those games that are losing sleep over the fact that people are exchanging discs between each other, that there are, you know, emulators playing their games available on the internet and so on. I don't think there's many of those people losing sleep. I could be wrong, and you know, I'm prepared for people to come back at me on that one, but you know, I think that it just enables you to have an experience. That's what a backup does.
Yeah, that opens up a whole nother can of worms we could get into as far as how, I mean, you know, a lot of these companies or developers and publishers, I mean, they care about the game in so much as it's profitable for them. And we see this as a kind of a, you know, time and time again, and even today, especially today, you know, they just don't give a crap about the archivability or the, you know, the archival aspect or preservation of their work. I mean, once they stop being able to make money off of it, I mean, they could give a crap. Now, you know, there is that resurgence in, you know, digital libraries and Sega Forever. I mean, we'll see what how many of these IPs they end up bringing back and trying to make more money on. That could potentially cause issues. And I do see it at that point of view. And Sam, when you had your, you know, when you had that thread out there, I mean, a few people did mention that they, you know, feel that that, you know, copies and backups, you know, or however you do it, like, you know, that can be fine, but the developer should still get a cut of that somehow if you're selling like a reproduction copy.
Well, I mean, here's the deal with that. If you've ever sold a copy of a game that says not for resale, you're breaking the idea of what the producer of the game, who the publisher was. I mean, that's the whole point of it right there. You know, there's all these people who want to talk about, well, you're taking money from the developer. I'm going to tell you right now, the dude that's selling Panzer Dragoon Saga up on eBay for $500 is not giving a dime to Sega Team Andromeda that doesn't even exist anymore. I mean, this idea that you're stealing money from the developers after 20 years, it's BS. It's just BS. I mean, Guardian Heroes is on the Xbox Live, okay? If you want to play Guardian Heroes, that's the way you should play it. Plain and simple.
Hell yeah.
I mean,
I love that Treasure embraced that and released Radiant. I mean, that was the only way I could play Radiant Silver Gun for a long time. And some of those games.
And that's what I'm saying. I mean, if you want to go and pick up, you know, a copy of a game that has been digitized, I prefer physical media. I would have loved it if it had come out in physical. But if you want to embrace that, then I say go for it. Because by giving the money to these publishers whenever they do these remasters, these remakes, then we, you know, afford ourselves the opportunity that later on we'll have more games fall in that same category. The problem is whenever you have games that are never going to be re-released in the way we're playing them. Prime example is the Police Knots. The Police Knots English fan translation is not going to come. It's not going to be, you know, re-released by Konami. I mean, look at what they're doing now, Metal Gear Survive and such. I mean, it's not going to happen. So, you know, for people who want to bring up that argument all the time, I mean, it's your opinion. That's fine. It's perfectly fine. But let's use some reason behind it. Let's actually, you know, dissect this and think about it. Who's actually losing money over this stuff?
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, I don't think it's a matter of losing money, but it's almost like if that money is on the table, you know, what's kind of interesting is, you know, like where you look at the television and film industry, they negotiate with, you know, with the actors, with everybody who makes the writers, you know, you get there is a royalty structured contract that, you know, for the life duration of whatever, however that show is syndicated or sold off or however that happens, you get a cut of that for as long as that cycle goes. And games, as far as I know, I don't think game publishers ever really thought that the same way.
They don't. And that's an argument I brought up upon that thread. I was like, you know, you have all these individual members of the development team. They have never seen a dime of money from that game other than their initial checks while they were working on it. And they might have possibly got a bonus of some sort. I mean, a lot of these developers are in Japan. I don't know how they do their structure. But I mean, that whole argument behind you're stealing money from so-and-so, I just don't see the merit in that argument. I mean, if you're just going to tell somebody they're stealing something, then tell them they're stealing something. But if you're going to make the argument that they're losing money to, you know, whoever's losing money because you're not giving them they're not getting a cut. Like, again, let's look at eBay. Let's look at Yahoo. Let's look at all these websites, Craigslist, Facebook. Let's look at all the mom and pop's places and retail outlets like GameStop. GameStop doesn't send no money to anybody. I mean, this whole idea that the secondhand market changes because it's a reproduction, it just blows my mind.
As I was alluding to earlier, that kind of reminds me, I feel like the publishers really have not been holding up their end of this, and they have a responsibility if they expect to make money on these works in the future, you know, 20 years down the line, to keep those IPs preserved and make sure that you know, the source code is not being lost for Panzer Dragoon Saga, and make sure that, you know, these titles are making a better effort to make sure that these games are more widely available on modern platforms. Now, obviously, in Sega's case, there's so many IPs that came out around the Saturn era that were so niche that maybe they just abandoned all hope that they could appeal to a wider audience. And so they just gave up hope completely. And of course, in that sense, I mean, that probably describes a vast majority of the classics in the Saturn library, as you're describing, that, you know, it's very unlikely that they'll ever try to bring those back and try to release them digitally in a legitimate retail form. So, you know, until that day happens, I mean, why the hell not do whatever you can to preserve it via repros and copies and backups and whatever.
I also believe that if I'd put my heart and soul into the development or creation of a game, I'd want to know people were still interested in playing it 20 years later. I think that would give me a sense of fulfillment beyond necessarily a financial one anyway. And again, I know people might come back at me for saying that, but, you know, I really believe that some of those people were very, very thrilled to know that people were still interested in playing their games.
And, you know, this is something I just want to take a stop. I mean, for anybody who's listening in, I mean, if you have a disagreement with us, if you have an argument against us, if whatever the case is, you know, you can always find us over up on Facebook. We have our Facebook page, The Saturn Junkyard. You can come over there. You can drop us some information, send us an inbox message, whatever you want to do. And, you know, put your argument out there. I mean, we love feedback from the community, and we're not necessarily going to be 100% right. These are just our opinions. So, I mean, hear them out. Think about it. You got a counter argument, drop it, and let's talk about it. Another thing that, you know, I think we need to talk to, and we've been alluding around it, is the whole aspect of IP rights. We're talking about a console that's 20 years old. We are, and it, for anybody outside of the United States, I hate to tell you, I don't have vast information knowledge about what's going on. I don't even know how it works in the UK. Or Canada, for that matter. But here in the States, you're looking at, you know, 60 plus years for something to move into the, you know, the common area where everybody can have access to it. You know, it's fair use.
Oh, yeah. Public domain.
Yeah, public domain. You're looking at 60 plus years, and that's with nobody trying to hold the IP right. That's with nobody going and getting any. I mean, that's with nobody touching it. Okay, 60 years after the Sega Saturn, we will be lucky to find a Sega Saturn that even works. These machines are completely mechanical based. You have a CD drive working. This is not something you can just plug a card into. Thank God for, you know, the optical disc replacement systems, you know, like our ODEs, where we can actually, you know, utilize things like the Rhea and Phoebe and such like that. But I mean, I really doubt in 40 years we're going to find a Sega Saturn that has a functioning original disk drive in it. And that kind of, you know, pushes on to the idea, not just the timeline aspect of it, but I mean, how we even utilize these backups. I mean, the Shiro guys were talking about it. I mean, there is no way to play a backup on a Saturn without utilizing some kind of trick. I mean, unless you found a whole stack of Sega Saturn blanks that had the wobble on it, that had the security bypass, you're either going to be doing the swap trick, which kind of falls into murky legal waters because legally you're not really having to alter the system. You're just confusing it. On top of that, you have mod chips, which have been around for almost as long as the Saturn's been around. You have things like the pseudo Saturn, which, you know, goes through the RAM-ROM expansion. So, I mean, you have to have a way to play these games. I mean, it isn't this, and I think that Chris was talking about that the other day, Chris from Saturn Memories. He's never really gotten into the repro scene because, unlike, you know, the Sega CD or the TurboGrafx CD or the Dreamcast, you can't just burn something to a disc and drop it in. You actually have to go through some extra steps.
Yeah, and the irony there is that the Saturn is, if of all those platforms, Saturn is probably the one that, you know, backups and copies would be most useful for, just given how expensive its library is, even relative to the Dreamcast and Neo Geo CD.
I tell you what's strange, though, for me, I have a completely different attitude to copies for the Saturn than I do for copies for the Dreamcast. My Dreamcast collection is vast and largely consists of games which are originals in their original packaging. I had a couple of bits of vaporware made into reproduction copies for the Dreamcast, but that's all I've ever bought for the Dreamcast. However, my attitude towards copies, backups, repros for the Saturn is completely different. And I think that one of the things Brian alluded to, the price, has a certain bearing on that. But also, I don't know why I have those two quite different sort of attitudes. I don't know why that is. So I just thought I'd throw that in there. I'm sorry, it's apropos to nothing. But
I'm the very same way. I will not play a burn disc on my Dreamcast. Main reason being, there might not be any legitimacy behind it. But GD-ROMs are a lot harder to replace than a CD. It's a lot easier to replace the CD drive in a Saturn, or the laser assembly in a Saturn, for me at least, than it is to, you know, try to find a working GD-ROM, or to replace the laser on it. I just don't want to try it. So whenever it comes to my Dreamcast collection, the only thing I play burned on there is a mini CD that allows me to basically play, you know, Japanese games. That's the only burned game I actually own. You got plenty of reproductions in the sense that, you know, people are actually pressing CDs with all these new, I mean, the Dreamcast is still getting games to this very day, and it's going to continue to get games.
Which is awesome, by the way.
Right. And yeah. I mean, you just had the Breakers game, which was basically a Neo Geo game that propped out. And I wish we had the same scene whenever it came to the Saturn, but there again, you would have to have a way to play backups to do it, unless somebody figured out the, you know, how to press a CD that had the wobble on it. And I'll be honest with you, if somebody figures out how to press a CD with a wobble on it, somebody's going to probably figure out how to do that themselves. Probably in some country, we're not going to name any specific countries, but, you know, they're going to figure out how to do that, and they're going to start selling them on the net. And I mean, at that point, you know, Phantom Chips and all the rest of it is gone. I mean, you're just going to buy a stack of these discs that's got the wobble on it and burn games to them.
Well, and a huge difference too. I mean, I think as far as being more conducive to the indie developers, at least in 2018, stems back to the development decisions that Sega made back in the day when designing the consoles, and that's the Dreamcast is just so much easier and simpler of architecture wise to develop for than the Saturn was. That, I mean, you do have a lot of people interested in dissecting and reverse engineering the Saturn. I mean, you have Professor Abrasive, you know, you have those types of people out there who are like really pushing the scene forward and helping make the Saturn, you know, library more, at the very least, more accessible to people, and helping bring to the forefront games that may have been canceled along the way, and making it easier for people to play, you know, existing games. But, you know, I don't see a situation where the Saturn will necessarily attract the same indie development scene that the Dreamcast has, just by virtue of its complexity.
Right. So, you know, one other thing that's really the hot topic, and we've bounced around it a couple of times, is, and Simon, you know, was talking about it with the gifting somebody a copy. You know, there is a repro scene, and we have to dissect the repro scene a little bit, because, you know, there's reproductions in the sense of creating backup art, you know, a new manual or new case art, or if you want to ditch the North American or European PAL long boxes altogether and go with a, you know, a CD case or a DVD case, whatever the case might be, you know, people are actually going out of their way to make custom art, or, you know, resizing original artwork to fit, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What I'm kind of getting at is the whole aspect of buying these things, because that's where I see a lot of people, even in the people who are cool with backups or cool with copies, they're cool with that whole aspect of it. They're like, whoa. You're paying somebody? No. We're not paying nobody. That's not bueno. Here he goes. If I buy a stack of CDRs, if I buy a whole bunch of ink, if I have to invest in a printer that actually is worth something, I have to invest in a way of laminating the discs so that they actually look nice and you don't have to worry about data holes in it from, you know, it dropping on the floor or being upside down for 2 seconds. That's a monetary investment. So my point behind it is that you're paying for materials, and a lot of people have said that, but I mean, that's the truth. You're paying for materials, high quality paper, high quality media, high quality ink, high quality printer, way to, you know, do all this, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So you have this monetary aspect of it that has to go into it. So if you're just expecting somebody to give you something that has, you know, the Q file and everything on it, I mean, I don't understand it.
Yeah, I'm going to chime in here. I'm sorry if I'm polarizing the chat a little bit, guys. But first, to your first point, Sam, a friend of mine who is quite happy to share copies was quite vocal the other day in denouncing repros as fakes, said he wouldn't buy fakes. And I was quite shocked because that was quite, I felt, a loaded thing to say. It implied that in some way you were either conning yourself or you were buying a product that was fraudulent. And that's not how it is to me. For a start, much of the repro scene is original art. And let's first of all say that Sega Europe, for certain, and I'm sure maybe Sega America, made absolutely disgraceful choices when it came to packaging. So much of the Saturn software that you possibly own will literally fall to pieces in your hands. And I've had that happen. You know, game boxes made of cardboard and plastic where the glue has calcified in some strange way, fossilized, I don't know. But you know, the game cases for a lot of games are literally falling to pieces. So that's one thing. Which perhaps would give you a reason to want to buy a piece of reproduction casing. But also, some of the reproduction pieces that I've had, particularly by Ben Boyd, I'm going to name it, they are pieces of artistry. They're custom-made pieces. They don't exist. They're not copies of anything. They are custom-made packaging. And that's all Ben makes. He doesn't make the discs. So in no way do I think you could accuse him of doing anything fraudulent or fake. It's not. It's absolute art. What he's producing is artistic. And the other thing is, the first time I received any of Ben's work, it was as a gift. It wasn't even as a transaction. It was a gift. It came around Christmas time. It absolutely blew my mind because of the artistry involved in it. He made me a case for Christmas nights, and he made me an incredible manual to go with the case. The artistry involved in it was tremendous, but also the actual gift giving and the fact that he was willing to share his artistry, that was a wonderful thing. And it's one of those things, I think, that helps. It's part of the glue that helps cement our community and makes it so strong. Is the exchange of reproduction stuff between people within the community, not necessarily for profit, but as you say, Sam, as well, I will 100% endorse what you've said. When you exchange money to these people, they're not making vast amounts of money off you buying two or three games off them. They've put their heart and soul into the production of these pieces. The presentation cases, the inks that they use, the papers they use. It's top quality stuff, and it's not about making a quick buck. It's not about trying to pass something real or original when it's not. It's about giving you something that you proud to have sat on your coffee table while playing the game, while you're having the experience. And perhaps also people like me who like to hold something physical in the hand. Perhaps, you know, for some people it's okay to emulate games and to play them on a PC with a Saturn pad. That's not for me. I like to have a something I can hold in my hand. And if it's a game that was out of my financial reach, or the amount of pressings make it so rare that it's very unlikely I'll ever get a chance to eBay it, if I can get a reproduction of that, happy days. That's what I say.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I think a huge part of it, I mean, you know, there, like everything, there's always gray areas. And I think the when a lot of people think of the word repros or hear that, you know, they go right to assuming, oh, it's people passing off fraudulent copies as originals. And, you know, obviously, I don't think any of us here are condoning or are advocating for that. I mean, we're obviously, you know, the nuance here is that these are clearly understanding that the seller is making is that this is a copy and made all the well to your example with like Ben Boyd and a lot of those people who put their own artistic spin on those materials to give you something that you can appreciate and that's tangible and most of all unique from the original packaging that actually stands out as its own piece that I think is a really cool aspect of the community that seems to be growing a lot. And I'd be really curious to see how far that goes, especially now that you're seeing, companies like, not Retrobit. Who's the, I'm blanking here. They're making all of the new Saturn cases.
Are you talking about Limited Run? Well, it's not Limited Run. Yeah, Limited Run games.
Yeah, and so like, you know, it seems to be as something that's growing to be more. I mean, it's still a niche, but certainly something that the community is starting to rally around. That there is this demand for some sort of more tangible, clean product beyond just burning CDs that you know, people can buy. And the other piece of this, I think you and I, Simon, this applies to most. Like, we just don't really have a lot of the technical know-how or even the equipment. Like, I just have a laptop that doesn't even have a disk drive. So when somebody just says, oh, if you want the game, just burn it, like, yeah, I can't really do that, guys. So although I can get into this a bit later, but I've recently got a Raya, and that is that's going to be pretty interesting. Already I see a ton of value in something like that, especially if we can get to a point where those can be more widely accessible that for, you know, really transforming how people who just want to play the games can do so. But
Brian, can I just say that both Sam and I are shocked that you don't think I would be able to burn my own games? that's a joke, folks, because there's no way on earth I would be able to burn my own games. So when I can go to someone like Nightwing Productions, Marvin Macias, and buy stuff from him, that helps me out in so much. There's no way I could do that for myself. So to be able to buy from someone is the only way I'm going to get games like that, unless someone's kind enough to make me one. There's no way I'm going to be able to make one for myself.
And again, you know, that kind of, it's all goes back to what I was talking about. You know, you're paying for somebody's time. You're paying for materials. And I think a lot of the aspect of people thinking that you have a fake, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, yeah, it's not the original thing. It's not the commercial release. I mean, anybody who's trying to pass it off as the real thing. I mean, I don't know about y'all, but when people say I got a fake game, just look at the bottom of the disc and see if it's got a ring on it. See if it's got the security ring on it. That's all you have to do. See if it's got Sega, you know, I mean, just look at it and see what it says. On top of that, I mean, I think a lot of this whole fake, trying to pass fakes off as real thing is more of an issue that really started, at least here in America, with the Nintendo and Super Nintendo cartridges.
Oh, for sure. You know, any Pokemon, Game Boy stuff, for sure.
Exactly. I mean, there's this whole aspect of you're buying a fake. And this kind of goes back to what I was talking about. You have people who are collectors and people who are gamers. I'll be honest with you. If there was a game that was $700, $800 going for, and I really wanted that game, and somebody told me, hey man, I got a game that'll work. It ain't the real game, but it'll work. I ain't gonna care. I'm just gonna get it. That's God's honest truth, because I want to play the game.
Yeah.
Now, if somebody tries to sell that fake at $700, then that's where the issues really start. And again, like, that's something you, it's not that easy to do with a Saturn. I mean, it's not that easy to do. Yeah, you can probably pass off the artwork. You can probably pass off, you know, the disc possibly if you've got a, you'd have to put some effort into making that disc look legitimate. I mean, you can't, just look at some of these repros. Look at the quality of some of these repros, you know, and you will see that there are some who are just like in the dirt. No offense, but your quality ain't up to snuff. And then you got people who are like, you know, Murder of Crows level. He, you know, his stuff is immaculate. It's amazing the way that stuff, it looks like a retail copy. I mean, it doesn't look like the retail copy because he always does custom artwork, but it looks retail. Okay. So, I mean, you just got to take it from that point of view, I think. At least I take it from that point of view. You're free to do whatever you want to do. So, I think we kind of got the big topics out of the way. So, I kind of wanted to give us a little bit of time to, you know, kind of talk about some closing thoughts in regards to, you know, what we think about the repro scene altogether, how we think about, you know, what can it do going forward, and, do we see the community really embracing it? Because at this point in the game, I really don't. It's still 50-50. You know, it might be 45-60, you know, whatever the case is. Me, myself, personally, I think that copies are absolutely essential for people getting into the game, getting into the scene for the very first time. Especially people who aren't, you know, bringing in six figures a year. I absolutely believe that backups are a necessity because of the whole aspect of, depending on your environment, whatever the case is, these things are eventually going to die. I've had numerous games already die. Most of them have actually been Dreamcast. I've only had one Saturn game quit on me. But there again, this media isn't going to last forever. So we have to have a way of making it last, not just for archival reasons, but also just because I want to be able to play the game. Lastly, I think reproductions in the sense of cases, disc media, you know, I think that serves an absolute purpose. You know, I kind of, this is something I've been talking with the Sega Saturn Shiro guys as well as, you know, the Saturn Junkyard guys, but I've had an offer on my entire collection. I'm not going to say how much I've been offered, but I've had an offer on my entire collection. And I've pondered on whether I want to make this deal because it means I have to sell my entire collection to this guy. But for what he's willing to pay me, I will be able, I've already done the math, I've already thought about it, I've already looked at the money wise, I can get DVD cases, a good printer, and some really good, you know, media to print on, and I can make a backup, a repro myself of every single game I own, and it won't be disc only. I won't have the original, and I know a lot of collectors are going to be like, dude, you're going to sell your, they're almost all disc only copies anyway. It would cost me five times that much to buy new cases, to get new artwork printed, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I haven't made a decision on that yet, but it's a pretty good opportunity that I'll do that.
Yeah, and these days I've been almost going the opposite direction a little bit. I traditionally haven't had a lot of experience with copies or burning anything, so that's not really, I don't know, I've always just gravitated towards getting original copies of pretty much everything I'd own. One of the things that kind of woke me up to the, the mortality of our consoles is when my Dreamcast disk drive went out. And at that point it was like, well, crap, I have this whole collection of, you know, a couple hundred games. Like, what am I going to be able to do if all of my, you know, I can't just keep buying Dreamcasts forever. At some point, you know, everybody seems to be having this problem at some point or another, that, you know, these drives just weren't that well built. So we got to, you know, I want to at least figure out a way that I can continue playing those games. Cause as you said, at the end of the day, I just want to play those games. Or continue playing those games. And so, you know, it's really gotten me thinking, well, maybe I should, you know, get a disk drive replacement, like the SD card readers and the GDEMU and the Rhea. And so I picked up a Rhea for the Saturn, and I installed that in that one. And I have a GDMU too, but that one I'm still trying to get to work. But the Rhea, I mean, already just after 2 days of running it, I could see the whole, this just a ton of value in that as the way forward for preserving our collections and just making things just easier and more accessible to everybody. I mean, the irony is that these are still, you know, fairly expensive replacements, and not a lot of people are making them. So you know, as far as I know, only one person is making them. So, you know, it's not viable necessarily to everyone yet, but it's, you know, it's getting closer. And I just really, I think now my big focus or my big project is going to go through all of my Dreamcast and Saturn games and either use like Disc Juggler or one of those to try to get them all backed up. I think that's, and then put on those SD cards. So that's my big focus, I think, going forward.
Okay. My sort of closing thoughts on the whole subject is, first of all, Peter, say that for me, I've had some absolutely brilliant gifts from our good friend Nuno, who couldn't be with us on this podcast. He made me a fabulous case for my X-Men versus Street Fighter. I've had wonderful reproductions from Ben Boyd, from Marvin Macias, and I'm hugely in favour of the repro scene. But I'm also a collector. I'm never going to stop buying games for the Saturn that aren't copies or repros. I'll still be picking up Japanese imports. I'll still be looking around video game stores, even the horrible sex, to try and find new Saturn games. So, I don't think the two things are mutually exclusive. I don't think that you have to be one or the other. I'm going to still remain a collector of Saturn games, but I'm also going to be a user of repros. I would say one thing, though, in terms of copies and in terms of, say, the pseudo Saturn, and that is that it's actually meant that the volume of games that I now have access to and the volume of games that I now have at my disposal have made my terrible inability to finish a game or stick with a game even worse. I've got so many games that I now want to play that I hop from game to game, night to night, and it's really difficult for me to finish anything or to put a lot of time into things. I think it's stopped me from getting firmly into Panzer Dragoon Saga. I think it's stopped me from getting into Deep Fear, because I know that I can just flip to the next sort of platformer or shoot 'em up that I can spend some time on. So that is perhaps an unforeseen drawback about the copy scene. It's allowed me to have too many games at my disposal.
That's interesting. I feel the same way. Even with discs, though, as I like get a bunch of them, I just have this backlog that's massive. So you gravitate to just playing whatever you're able to, because you have, you know, all these games available. And I think especially with a digital library like that, I mean, I'm wondering if, and this probably varies person to person, but if there's an element even just subconsciously that we, you know, maybe appreciate those experiences a little less because we didn't have to spend our hard-earned money or have this nostalgia or these memories of acquiring the game or this investment that we had to put in both financially and emotionally to acquire that game. I'm kind of curious what the more psychological aspects of it might be.
I would have to totally agree with you on that, because whenever I was picking up, this goes to even having the legitimate disc. Whenever I was picking up these disc lots back in 2010, 11, and 12, whenever I picked up the vast majority of my Saturn collection, you know, there might be 30, 40 games up in there. Of course, I'd sell, you know, half of them most of the time because they'd just be duplicates. But whenever you pick up, you know, 15, 20 games for, you know, $100, there's no real value in that game versus, you know, going out and paying $150, $200 for a disc. I mean, that's a whole different dynamic. And unless it's a game I honestly really want to play or something I have huge nostalgia for, it's really hard for me to sit down through a game. I mean, the YouTube channel's made it, you know, interesting in regards to like the Panzer Dragoon Saga Let's Play. Last time I played it, I only got about halfway through disc two, maybe about the same spot we are right now with the Let's Play. And I stopped playing. I've only beaten that game one time, and I own two discs of the whole copy. So, I mean, the backlog aspect of it, the monetary aspect of it, I totally agree with you on that. Cause I mean, hell, we were talking about a couple of casts back, or maybe even a couple of months ago. I've got so many PS2 game backlogs. It's ridiculous, dude. PS2 games go for pennies. And I have probably got well over 40 or almost 50 of them, probably, if I'm just looking at it, cause they're sitting over there up on the shelf that I have yet to play. And truth be told, I'm getting to the point now where I'm wondering that how many of these games I'm collecting am I ever going to get around to playing, let alone beating?
Yeah. I didn't have one copy before 2017. I had about 60 PAL titles and about 20 import titles. And I hadn't played, I would imagine, a quarter of them properly. So that's what I thought. When I opened the Saturn Junkyard again, that's what I thought I'd be doing, was writing opinion pieces about the games that I already had. Now, I must have another 100 games that I've got to get through. And I'm not saying that that's a bad thing or that I'm not complaining about that, but the whole backup scene has just, wow, you know, it's like it makes the whole choice thing for a glutton like me, it's bad. It's like being in a candy shop and having a billion sweets to try at one time. You know?
Yeah, and, you know, it kind of makes me think back to when I was a kid and you would get... and I don't know if you guys had similar situations, but like, you know, I wouldn't get games all the time. I would save my money for them, or sometimes my parents would be nice enough to be like, all right, you know, here's something for you, or a Christmas present or whatever. So, you know, but you would get relatively few games compared to today, where I, you know, just pick them up, just, you know, impulse purchases left and right, basically. Well, maybe not right now at the moment, but certainly over the last year or so. But you know, back then you just like were looking forward and anticipating to these games, and even if it wasn't the greatest game in the world, I mean, you get it, and you'd really spend a ton of time just playing and replaying and really absorbing everything it had to offer. And I feel like that's kind of where I would like to get back to, in that mentality of just you know, really setting out a plan to say, all right, I have access to, you know, a potentially infinite backlog of games, especially, you know, when you're looking at backups and copies and whatnot. Although right now I'm just trying to get my current discs backed up now. That's my focus. But anyway, it's just like really setting out a plan to, like, how am I going to be able to get more out of the games that I currently own?
Okay, so Brian, this is what we're going to do. We're going to set up a monastery, okay, a Saturn monastery. With Sagata Sanshiro as our mentor and leader. And then we're going to have an austerity program where we're only allowed a game a week. And we've got to hammer that game, not be able to eat or drink. We're just going to play Sanshiro wanted us to do.
Hey, y'all can do that all day long. I got a mortgage to pay.
that's why I kind of liked when we did the Burning Rangers, the game club episode last month. Because, I mean, really for that time, I mean, even though we had very varying degrees of ultimate, you know, appreciation for the title at the end of the day, or at least, or, you know, we had varying opinions. I mean, it really forced me to like really dissect and jump in and play that game and really spend that kind of time that I would, like when I was a kid, just like really hammering away at the same game for a week or two, to really get the ins and outs and absorb as much as I could, in order to prepare when we were talking about it, when we had the podcast talk and pull our thoughts. So, I think something like that kind of structures that out, even just, you know, have with the community, kind of the way you do your challenges. I think those challenges, Simon, have a similar effect where you get people, you know, competing and then talking about their strategies and really dissecting the mechanics of the game and kind of building off of each other as far as what they're observing and how they're playing it and what they're getting out of that experience. But I think you could just have a similar thing. I mean, the monastery, maybe that's one interpretation of that idea.
That's a step too far a little bit.
Yeah. But maybe just like, you know, kind of an ongoing thread of like a community game club that we could pose out to everybody and do like a game a month or something. I don't know. We'll have to think about that.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I do believe that will close us up. I think we had our closing thoughts go for about 15 minutes. At least it felt that way. So if you enjoyed this little tirade, enjoyed this new format, whatever the case was, it's not really a new format. We just wanted to actually sit back and talk and, you know, kind of be loose about it. But we would always love suggestions from the community. We always love feedback from y'all. You can find us over on Facebook at facebook.com/thesaturnjunkyard. You can also get a hold of us directly by email if you want to. That is thesaturnjunkyard@gmail.com. As well, you can find us on YouTube. We got youtube.com/thesaturnjunkyard. And find us at our Facebook group. I mean, we're all over the place. We really are. And don't forget, we've got this thing called a blog. If you like being one of them people who reads words and such, the little letter and squiggly things, we got you covered on that too. 11 years running, thanks to Father K and a whole bunch of other boys, including Nuno, the sleeper. And I think that's pretty much going to close everything down. So, from all of us here at the Saturn Junkyard, this is us signing out.
Adios.
See you later.